Hi, welcome to Sonic Cereal. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Mark. And in this podcast, we take a deep dive into albums from some of our favorite artists, track by track.
Yes, and now we're doing Björk's Vespertine. It was cool. It was released in August 19, 2001, and it's art pop, glitch pop, and folktronica.
Folktronica?
Folktronica.
I don't know if I hadn't heard that before.
That's really cool.
It was put out on one little independent records?
No, it's called Yes. Yeah, it's one little independent records. And the album's themes or concepts are introversion and intimacy.
Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. And what state of mind would you say Björk was in when she was making this album?
She was in an introspective phase, focusing on love, emotional connection, and creating a private, serene space after a difficult film experience.
What film is that?
She was filming Dancer in the Dark. And, yeah, it was bad because, the director was mean to her.
That says it all.
Yeah.
As far as cultural impact, it influenced, I think few would argue that it hasn't influenced modern electronic music. It inspired artists like SZA and Arca.
That's nice.
Yeah.
They're good artists. And it peaked at number 19 on the Billboard 200. And it hit top 10 in the UK and France.
And what's the general feel of the album?
It's dreamy, delicate, and intimate with a soft, wintry atmosphere and whispered vocals.
Do all those make sense to you?
Seductive whispers, yeah. The themes across the album are love, sensuality, intimacy, solitude, and creating emotional sanctuaries.
Yeah.
That's nice.
That's nice. How did the critics like this album?
Well, when it was released, it was praised for its intricate, ethereal production, blending delicate microbeats and lush orchestration.
And
AllMusic described it as a lush, idyllic album showcasing Björk's unique sonic atmosphere.
And then Pop Matters called it a cozy sanctuary of sound. And they talked about how the album worked best as a cohesive whole.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was so much more of a thing back then. You know, like, you'd make an album and it told the story.
Yeah.
Now it's like fast music, like fast fashion.
Fast food. Fast is the future. Unlike mainstream albums, Vespertine was compared to Kid A for pushing artistic boundaries rather than aiming for commercial success.
Do you think that you agree with that?
Yeah. What about today?
It's considered one of Björk's finest works, known for its emotional depth and innovative sound. She's always innovative.
Yeah, but for some reason, this is like the most innovative.
What makes it more innovative?
The concepts and the instrumentation and the experimentation.
One more.
I don't know. But you know, it remains highly influential for its experimental fusion of electronica and intimate personal themes. Yeah, so that's what I was saying.
What about, what album was this of Björk's?
This was her fourth album.
And what does Vespertine mean?
It means flourishing in the evening and is also derived from Vespers, evening prayers by monks. So, yeah, After releasing her previous album, Homogenic, she embarked on a 2-year tour.
And during this time, director Lars von Trier contacted her to star in Dancer in the Dark. And she agreed to both act in the film and create music for it.
Right. But unfortunately, the experience was challenging due to conflicts between Björk and von Trier. And while staying in Sweden and Denmark for the film, she found solace by working on new music during her downtime. And the emotional taxing experience of filming led Björk to create songs focused on love and relaxation as a form of escape.
And after the film wrapped, Björk moved to New York, where she met artist Matthew Barney, whose relationship with her inspired many of the love songs on this album.
Yeah. That's cute. So, reflecting on her newfound happiness, she wanted to contrast Homogenic's loud, distorted sound by focusing on quieter vocals, microbeats, and percussive instruments that sounded good on laptop speakers, which she was using to create the album.
Wait, she was playing stuff out of laptop speakers and then recording it?
No. You see, she was using her laptop to make the songs, and so she would hear it through the speakers.
Oh, okay, got it.
So she wanted instruments that sounded good so they could translate through the speakers, you know what I'm saying?
That is very forward-looking.
Yeah. And the last track of Homogenic is All Is Full of Love, and it acts as a bridge to Vespertine. So it's like a bridge song. What was the original?
It was Domestica, the original working title, and it reflected the idea of creating a personal paradise inside your home.
That's Domestica. Nice.
Surprised it's not a drag queen.
Domestica, what would she look like? She had like a cooking apron on. All right.
It also could be a drug.
Domestica. It was like an allergy pill.
Just something that calms down your partner. Go make me some dinner.
Oh, no. The album was recorded in several locations, including Spain, London, New York, and Reykjavik.
And words commonly used to describe the album include winter world, paradise, frozen, celestial...
whispered vocals, microbeats, swans, harps, laptops, Salvation and choir. What more do you want?
What's salvation?
Salvation. It's like heaven. It's like paradise where you feel safe.
Huh. But everything else is real, like microbeats and vocals and harps. Why are you throwing in some religion?
Salvation.
All right, in 2018, the...
What?
I just saw the National Leather Mannequin.
Oh my gosh. Tell us about it.
The National Theater Mannheim and Hotel Pro Forma produced an opera based on the album.
That's neat. And there is also a restaurant in Los Angeles named Vespertine.
I remember it.
You've been there?
Yeah.
I haven't.
Is it still there?
I don't know. I think so. And it's inspired by the album.
And according to Björk's Vault of Dark Memes, Vespertine is a popular album among twink bottoms.
And you would know, right?
And I would know.
Alright.
Do you remember when you first heard the album?
Yeah, I was in 8th grade, and it was cool. I forget where I bought it, but I had it, and I just remember being alone in my house a lot, and it was raining, and it was dark, and I had the lights out, and I was listening to this album. It was really magical.
That's so intimate.
I grew up normal. What was it? When was the first time you heard this album?
Oh, when it came out.
Yeah, that's around the same time I got it.
When it came out. I don't know. I think I downloaded it, and I had it. Oh, and I think, it would come on rotation.
I think I got it at a warehouse, and the girl was like, "Is this a gift for someone?" Like, because I was with my brother and my dad, and we just, like, didn't look like the type to, like, buy that CD. She's like, are you guys kidding with this? And she was like, yeah, I like all her albums, but I don't like this one because it's too, like, orchestral or something. I was like, okay.
How could you like Bjork and not like her evolution of herself?
Yeah. So that's what I said to her. And I said, bye. So, yeah.
Do you remember when you first heard this album? Oh, that, is that what you just told me?
Yeah.
How has the album aged for you over time?
Well, I feel like every time you listen to it, like, you hear something new because it's so layered, and I just appreciate more and more about it, and you know, as I learn what the album's about and the songs and stuff, it just, you know, it's they say the more you know about your, like, favorite artists and all their work, it kills the magic.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how I feel about that. I like all the information, and it enhances the magic for me. Gives me so much more to think about.
Yeah, you can extend your...
Oh, should we report our neighbors?
That's coming from inside.
What's going on?
I forgot what I was going
to
say.
All right. Well, should we move on to the overall production highlights?
Sure.
All right. Well.
Well, Best Routine was notable for its intimate, delicate production, using microbeats, like we said, and soft orchestral textures and intricate layers. It's funny how it's like this physical, like, you know, like.
Yeah.
Textures and layers, like it's almost like you can touch it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's sensory.
Anyway, to create a hushed and introspective atmosphere. It's a lot of fancy words just to say, like, it's nice. Feels nice.
Yeah. So the key producers included Bjork herself, along with Matmos and Tom McNack, also known as Opiate, who helped craft the album's experimental electronic sound.
Yeah, and for that sound, the album used found sounds and domestic noises like footsteps, shuffled cards, and crackling ice, blending them into the music to evoke something that was intimate and homey.
Yeah, and according to Wikipedia and Pop Matters, the mixing style, the production had an intricate, layered mix with electronic elements and orchestral strings blended seamlessly, creating a dreamy ambient quality. And then, as far as the innovative techniques, its use of Inuit Girls Choir and the Il Novecento Orchestra, alongside custom-made instruments like Xena Parkin's electric harp, added a unique otherworldly dimension.
Here, take this.
I don't know what's happening. Standout tracks like Cocoon employed minimalist beats and whispered vocals, emphasizing close personal feeling.
All right, let's talk about the album artwork. The Vespertine album cover was photographed by the couple Inez van Lamstord. Is that right?
I don't know.
and Vanude Mardin, with the graphic design by M&M Paris. Mm-hmm. Stop crunching that.
Sorry. This marked a departure from Bjork's longtime collaboration with collaborators, Mute Company.
Man, we were talking about all the time in the last couple albums.
Yeah, and as she began working with M.M. Paris on her album graphics moving forward to this day.
And notably, this
I was in one of their books.
Which one?
They put out a book recently, and they featured a section on all their all their artwork that's been in tattoos. And so I submitted a picture of my tattoo. Oh. And I made it to the cut. It was cool.
So you're a picture of that is in the film?
It's in a book.
Oh, in a book.
Yeah.
That's still cool.
Yeah, and then noticeably, this is also the first time... Oh, notably. This is the first time she displayed the name of the album on the cover. I don't know. This is kind of interesting. Or not.
The photo shoot took place at a pool in Santa Monica. I wonder which one. Where Bjork was captured wearing the iconic swan dress designed by Marcin Pijowski.
Yeah.
While laying down, kind of relaxing in the sun with her eyes closed.
Yeah. Chilling in the sun.
In a swan dress.
And in Santa Monica.
We've been.
It's just funny, because you would never think that was a place she chose. You'd think she would choose some place more magical.
Yeah, or just unusual.
Yeah. But that's cool. That's funny.
Yeah.
And she explained that she was drawn to swans at the time because they symbolized monogamy. And the image has been compared to the Greek mythological story of Leda and the swan, reinforcing the symbolic and artistic depth of the cover.
All right. We're on to the first track. Wow, this has been a long time to get here. This is the first track, Hidden Place. Today we are doing tracks 1 and 2, Hidden Place and Cocoon.
Yeah.
So let's start with Hidden Place.
It's so cool. I don't know. This is the first single from the album.
And it's about finding your cozy little love snuggle bubble with someone.
Yeah. So what was your first impression? I hate you, kinda.
Yeah, I really liked it. It just felt like transformational.
I like that. Well, I thought it sounded exotic, but recently, we went to this thing called Envelope San Francisco, and, it was cool because they played the album on a bunch of nice speakers in a room, and then they...
Like 50 speakers all around.
And so you're sitting on the floor with a bunch of strangers in the dark, and... So when this song came on, I felt like everyone was about to have an orgy. Remember those scenes in, like, Sense 8?
Yeah.
I thought it was going to turn to something like that, and I was like, oh, what if this happens? I just felt like everyone would start to, like,
because we were high.
Rid over each other, yeah.
And the light show was weird, too.
Yeah. I was like, what did I get us into? But yeah, that's what my thoughts were the last time I heard it.
Okay. So...
What? Why?
Okay, tell me about it. Tell me what you think about it.
I already told you what I thought about it, but Bjork said it was written falling... secretly in love with someone.
You didn't say it sounded exotic.
I did.
Oh, I didn't hear you. I was waiting for you to say that so we could move on.
Well, Bjork said it was written falling secretly in love with someone and not being able to express it. So I wanted to make the arrangement a thick current that is suppressed underground, like taboo, taboo, taboo. Unexpressed love, a hidden muscular fossorial snake.
She wow. said that?
Yeah, she said all that.
That get tiring after a while.
Yeah.
If that's like how someone just spoke all the time.
I know, I'd be like, can you just leave? I have a headache. It's like, yeah, uh-huh.
All right, let's talk about production. The song begins with this kind of muffled, rolling kick. And it sounds like a fluttering heart.
Yeah. And it's playing with that chopped up guitar sample or something. It is really cool. It's like glitchy pop. And the track features lush strings, choirs, and flutes orchestrated by Vince Mendoza, who met Bjork after collaborating with her on the song Gloomy Sunday for a 1998 AT&T compilation. And Mendoza also worked on Joni Mitchell's 2000 album, Both Sides Now.
What?
It sounds so inappropriate.
Wait, where is Gloomy Sunday? What album is that on?
That's on the AT&T compilation.
She made a song just for that.
Yeah.
Okay. She called it in. Like, all her songs are so, like, really thoughtful sounding. They're like, we need a song. And she just looked outside. She's like, do me Sunday.
Okay. The choir, performed by Metro Voices from London, has contributed to many films, including Romeo and Juliet.
Mm.
That's why it has that Hollywood sound.
That Hollywood sound?
Yeah. The track includes layered electronic percussion sounds created by a team of producers, including Jake Davies, Damien Taylor, Guy Sixworth, Matthew Herbert, and Matt Mose.
Guy Sixworth is... He's all...
He's... Yeah.
He's really part of the Bjork family.
He's collaborated with her from the beginning.
And let's talk about the song meaning.
No, let's talk about how Bjork played the bass line herself. Respect. I mean, how many females... I shouldn't go there, but how many singers create their own bass lines? I do. Along with everything else.
The chorus melody is inspired by Arnold Schoenberg's Transfigured Night, which is a string sextet, which was composed in
1899. That's cool.
Yeah.
I don't think, maybe she didn't do it on purpose, because sometimes you accidentally create melodies
that sound like other...
Yeah. Because you're like, oh, that sounds good, but subconsciously, it's because you've heard it before. Who cares?
That's true inspiration.
All right, let me tell you about the song meaning. The theme of the song revolves around exploring newfound passion in a relationship. And Bjork described it as creating a personal paradise with your partner, going to a specific emotional space where you feel deeply connected. Okay.
And the song reflects Bjork's desire for this emotional depth. And she humorously stated that she really wants a zigzaga.
What? What are you talking about?
You know, she just wants the sickest cat.
Alright. Referencing the intense passion and joy that comes with the emotional and intimate connection. I feel like we're just rambling and using the same words.
Alright, what was the overall vibe of the song?
It fits the larger concept of Vespertine, which is about finding solace and magic within intimate, personal spaces. I mean, yeah, when I first heard this song, I felt like it was about to take me on a journey, and I didn't know where. But it was nice. I'm okay with it. Come on, the Hidden Place Cruise. Tell me about the lyrics.
You tell me about the lyric that you like.
Oh, he's the beautifulest, fragilest, still strong, dark and divine, and the littleness of his movements hides himself. He invents a charm that makes him invisible, hides in the hair. He's only gonna break your heart, girl. That's a picture of him. He used to be a J. Crew model.
He was?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Alright. I always thought he was bald.
Well, like in later years.
I like the lyric, I'm so close to calling you up. Because, you know, like before texting anyway, I just remember, like, should I call him? Should I not call him? There was no way to, like, just be a casual, like, hey.
So now today it would be, like, I'm so close to DMing you.
Yeah.
Oh, whatever. Let's talk about the music video. It was directed by Inez and Vinod in Paris, basically the same people that made her album cover. And it was marking the first time they've ever directed a music video.
And it was shot over 4 days in London in February of 2001.
And now they've gone on to make videos for Lady Gaga. Just to show you, Bjork did it first. Well, initially, Inez and Vinod were supposed to create a video for I've Seen It All from Bjork's Selma songs, which is the soundtrack to Dancer in the Dark. But plans changed to Hidden Place.
Instead.
Yeah.
And Bjork specifically wanted Inez and Vinod to direct this video because they're a couple and it would reflect the song's themes of passion and intimacy. And
that's real nice. This warming liquid that moves in and out of Bjork's face represents her passion and emotions, while the extreme close-ups emphasize the intimate nature of the song.
And in one surreal moment, a vagina diagram flies out of her mouth, adding to the symbolic and emotional layers of the video. I just thought, when you said it was a vagina, I was like, so it's homoerotic.
Hmm. Homoerotic?
Like she's eating a vagina.
No. I think it's like she threw up her vagina.
Maybe she didn't like how it tasted.
That's all. Anyway, but you know, respect to her for letting a camera be so close to her face like that.
Yeah.
No makeup. She don't care.
I mean, she looks great, so.
Yeah.
Overall, the videos from this album, including Hidden Place, are known for their minimalist style, focusing more on, you know, like being subtle and evocative that way.
For sure.
Yeah.
What do the critics have to say?
Well, one critic, who was this? Oh, Drowned in Sound. I guess it was a magazine or something. Praised its ethereal quality, likening it to a cool, sharp breath of fresh air. I don't know, that makes it sound like a deodorant.
I'd use it.
but also described the song as a romantic dreamlike retreat from the outside world. And many say it showcases Bjork at her best.
Yeah, I agree. But on the other hand, some listeners on the album of the year felt that despite the beauty of the song, the overall minimalist approach made it feel repetitive and less engaging over multiple listens. Well, your attention spans are short, what can I say?
Well, and something you can tolerate a lot.
Yeah.
You know, like, you love listening to your own music.
I don't love listening to my own music. I just do it. Sometimes you have to. Sometimes, as an artist, you have to go through your stuff to make sure you stay humble. You know what I'm saying?
All right. What about remixes?
Bjork released an a cappella version with the single, and there's also a remix by Matmos called Hearts and Bones.
There's also two remixes. The first is the Enzu remix and the other the DYR remix.
That's cool.
They're both good.
Yeah. And there's the mashup with The Cure's Forest by Gordy Boy.
And someone told me you did a mashup.
I did a mashup with the Chemical Brothers.
You told me.
Star Guitar. I told you. I said, guess what? You're not going to believe this.
Sit down. Can we hear that? No.
Yes. Check it out. I thought it sounded good at the time.
I liked it.
Thanks. During Bjork's 2001 Vespertine tour, Tanya Tagak, I think that's how you pronounce it, often provided an intro with Inuk throat singing, adding a unique live element.
Can we hear her now?
Yeah, can we hear you throat sing? You showed me. You said, hey, I can do that. And I was like, all right.
I'm saving my voice for the podcast.
Oh. And on the same tour, Matmos contributed by shuffling cards live to replicate some of the percussive sounds in the song.
And in 2021, Bjork performed Hidden Place at her Bjorkestra concert in Reykjavik with the
the Hemralith Choir.
Yes, them. And the last five performances of her song was an a cappella version in Lisbon. Sorry, the last live performance. Yeah,
are you okay?
A cappella version in Lisbon just last year, in
2023. But also, guess what? This past summer, Arca played this song during one of her sets at Primavera Sound. And she was into it. And the song has been sampled by SZA for her song, Forgiveness.
What is that? Lucky X.
And even in Bjork's track, her own track, Desired Constellation.
Damn, she sampled her own song, that Dirty Dog.
Anyway, fun fact, the song was originally... I'm not reading that.
Why?
It's not right. It's not correct.
What's not correct?
Let's just move on.
Okay. Let's go to track two, Cocoon.
Cocoon. This is the third single from the album.
It is.
What was your first impression?
I liked it.
Okay, thank you, Paris. Well, in Denmark.
What was your first impression?
It just felt. I'll tell you. I'll get there.
Okay.
It's like that feeling you feel when you, when it's like 5 a.m. and you wake up and you're just laying in bed. And then you know you can fall asleep again. I don't know. I get it.
You mean like it's not 5 minutes before you're supposed to get up?
Yeah. While in Denmark, filming the Dancer in the Dark, Björk discovered an album called Objects for an Islet's Ill Home by Copenhagen-based electronic producer Thomas Nack, a.k.a. Opiate.
And since Nack was also from Copenhagen, Björk reached out to collaborate with him on some tracks.
Yes, and so she nearly finished the album when, while she was in Reykjavik, the melody for Cocoon came to her. So she called up Nack in the middle of the night, and he began working on it immediately. Because you don't play around when it comes to Björk. She says, get this shit done. Just like, okay, yes, ma'am.
They met in London in January of 2001 to record the song, and Nack brought only 3 tracks, while other programmers sometimes had hundreds. So I guess that, I don't know if it contributed to its minimalist vibe, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I was saying, it evokes that feeling of warmth and intimacy, like a cup of hot cocoa and morning cuddles. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. And how does this song fit within the album's flow?
Oh, I think when I was at that Envelope thing in San Francisco, I felt like it almost made me want to cry. Okay.
Well, 'cause it was so beautiful or so sad?
I don't know. It just, that feeling came over me.
I've never seen you cry.
Oh.
Are you just wait, honey.
No, you just shut it out of your mind. Because it's too traumatic for you. You black out when I cry.
That's dark.
So, you... I gotta write that down. Anyway. How does it fit with the album's flow?
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like a water slide. You're going down a hidden place, and you're like, where is this taking me? I like it. And then you go into the water, and you're just floating, and it's like that relaxation. And it's like, oh, it got quiet. But we're still so early in the journey. So where am I going to go next? Does that explain that for you?
Yes, it does really well.
Then tell me about the production highlights.
The production on this track feels kind of naked and ASMR-like, with kind of this intimate and very raw quality.
Yeah.
Oh, this is yours.
Well, Thomas Nack used something called an Insonic ASR-10 sampler to create the minimalist rhythmic elements of the song.
I wonder if you can get an emulator for that.
Yeah. You
know, like just download the
sounds. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
So Björk recorded 20 takes of the song.
Is that a lot? 20 takes?
No, not compared to me. Because I'm not as talented as her. I have to make like 60 takes of my singing.
But yeah, it took her 20 takes. But instead of piecing them together, she chose to use only one take to maintain a raw, unpolished sound.
Meanwhile, Beyonce's like, I only do 3 takes. And the first one is always good. Alright. Well, the beat stands out with the sound resembling rhythmic final crackling, possibly influenced by her Scatter Heart track from Summer Songs.
Dancer in the Dark.
Yeah.
Why does it have a name, Selma Songs and Dancer in the Dark?
I guess she just didn't want her work being associated with that movie at all. But I don't know. She liked the name because the main character is Selma.
Yeah.
And those are her songs. So I guess she's like...
Okay.
Maybe that's what she wanted the film to be called. I don't know. What's it mean? What's the song mean?
You tell me.
Oh man, it's like post-coital hibernation. And Bjork said the lyric was basically a whole diary, and she had to edit 90% of it.
Wow.
And again, this is who that song is about.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's in a Le Coq Sportif ad.
Le Coq Sportif. Oh my gosh.
It's a French brand.
Yeah, and so a key lyric is a train of pearls, cabin by cabin, is shot precisely across an ocean. And then there's another one.
He slides inside, half awake, half asleep. We faint back into sleephood.
And when I wake up, the second time, in his arms, gorgeousness, he's still inside me.
What do you make of this?
Yeah. It is like, really invasive.
Invasive or evasive?
Invasive.
Yeah, I like the... He slides inside, half awake, half asleep.
And then they go back into sleephood, and she falls asleep, and then she wakes up, and she's like, ah, get this thing out of me. What the hell?
I don't know why I just pictured that.
What if that's... Graphically. What direction this song could have taken? It's like... I don't know. Yeah, so...
What about the music video?
The video was directed by Iko Ishioka, and she's known for her costume work on Dracula, on films like The Dracula and The Cell.
I like Dracula. The Cell.
Yeah, I like The Cell.
Yeah.
It's a good movie, good costumes.
Yeah, beautiful gowns.
And it was shot in New York City in April 2001.
And this is the only music video that Ishioka ever directed.
Yeah. So,
what about the style?
It has a minimalist style.
Kind of like all the videos.
Yeah. And it's just, I wonder why she chose her. I could never find that out. She's like...
Just picked him out of a hat.
Yeah, she's like, I never directed a music video before. She's like, I don't care. You want to get paid or not? I'm Bjork, damn it. Anyway,
I think it'd be fun if you were in the position to commission someone to do a video for you, to like take a chance and do it with somebody who's new but is creative in other ways and see how that translates into video.
Yeah.
And that would for me be like interesting just as an artist to see how this person does that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I've thought about directing music videos. Hit me up.
You could have also been first lady.
Could have. The video feels sensual and dreamy, capturing the half-asleep, intimate mood reflected in the song's lyrics.
And Bjork's hair was styled by her childhood friend. Hrafnhildr Aramdottir.
Arnardottir. Or you could have just called her Shoplifter, because that's what she goes by.
No wonder.
But, yeah, the hair looked like, sometimes when I'm playing in the pool with my cousin, she would come up and be like, I'm Martha Washington. That's what it reminded me of.
With Teresa?
Nicole. Yeah.
I used to do that in the pool. Yeah. I had long hair. And...
Oh, yeah, you did. I had long hair, too. I probably did it.
Okay.
Anyway.
And contrary to popular belief, Bjork isn't naked in the video. She's wearing... We were just discussing...
Yeah.
If those were her actual nipples. Because she's wearing a very close-fitting bodysuit. And the nipples seemed really obvious, so...
They maybe just put, like, latex over her?
Maybe.
Like a rubber glove?
We can hypothesize all day.
Yeah.
Anyway. But it was still banned by MTV, even though she...
So prude.
So prude.
Yeah, this is pre-Nicki Minaj, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. She has a rocket coming out of her ass while she's...
Oh my gosh. See? I'd rather see a cocoon than that. Anyway... One reviewer said it's a pian to post-coital cuddling under a...
It's like an homage.
20 tog duvet.
Just start again.
I'm having grade school flashbacks. Okay. A plan to post-coital cuddling under a 20-tog duvet. From Bjork's finest album, Vespertine, Cocoon isn't the most obvious pop single, an intimate referee set to abstract laptop tones and rhythmic rhythms that suggest her bedbugs are rebelling. What? Okay, it was like going somewhere nice, and then it was like, oh, fuck off, I hate this job.
What?
Oh. Anyway.
Another reviewer found the song uncomfortably intimate, criticizing the trembling, whispering vocals, which he felt created an awkward and overly personal atmosphere. Whatever. That's music supposed to be personal.
Yeah.
And you... Like, you want to get intimate with music, you know?
Yeah.
You want to feel it.
Yeah.
You want to...
Sure. Okay. You're scaring me. There's a remix by Olivier Allery, a.k.a. Ensemble, called Retangled by Ensemble.
And then there's a Bjorkestra 2008... cover, and there's French Cricket, which we heard today.
Yes.
What do you think? How would you describe that?
You gotta be in a certain mood for it, I guess. I don't know.
When the nails on the chalkboard aren't quite doing it for you.
Oh my god. We got trivia.
During live performances with Matt Mos, Martin Schmidt would rub a microphone over his partner Drew Daniels' hair back and forth to create the static sounds, which enhanced the song's intimate romantic vibe.
Yeah. If you watch live performances of it, it just looks like he's like, it's okay. Like, you got this. Don't be so nervous. But yeah, she performed this on a television show with the Music Box once. A beauty this immense, who would have known as saintly. And then Camila
Moreno's
song Cerca appears to be influenced by Björk's Cocoon, sharing a similar delicate, intimate tone.
At what point does it become, like, you know, illegal?
I know. This is wrong.
No, like, sampling a little bit, but, like, what is a little bit? Or using, you know, or...
It's really obvious in this song. She doesn't even sample. It's, like, just, it sounds similar.
So they've just played the sheet music.
Yeah. Yeah. And I created a remix of this song called Track Queen Dance, offering my own unique take on its sound. What? I shouldn't say that.
Let's take a listen to it.
Sure.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
So you think you're beautiful?
If the shoe fits, I'll take it.
All right, that completes this.
Cheers. We're excited to go on this, more of this journey with
you. Yeah, Vespertine.
Let's get into it, mama.
We only did two songs because we wanted to make sure we could really spend time on the songs.
Yeah.
All right, you want some more?